OMG.
Hello?
I was just thinking what this group needs is a hot lumberjack.
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 408 for the week of May 23rd, 2022. I am Malk with Vitamin R, David T. Cole, and I'm here with Punch Bowl Punishment, Sarah D. Bunting.
Do you like me at all?
Grudging baseball team member Tara Ariano.
All right, I'll play catch, but that's it.
And basketball jersey over a t-shirt, Brandy Brown.
I don't want to go to detention.
Welcome to Extra Hot Great for another week. Before we get into the episode, we just want to thank everyone out there in podcast land for your patience with our 11th hour cancellation last week. Dave has once again died and come back to life. He has recovered. He is here with us. So we have rebooked last week's guest, Will Hines. You will hear him in an episode in June. And for now, speaking of rebooking, she's a comic and a podcaster you've heard here with us before. It's Brandy Brown. Welcome, Brandy.
Hello. Glad to be here finally.
We're thrilled to have you for this show. Let's get into it. Probably thought reality TV producers had run out of overwrought premises for dating shows. You child, you donkey. Here comes Love Struck High, in which a bunch of British 20-somethings and one Irish one pretend to enroll in an American high school and go through high school rituals like asking each other the homecoming dance, doing trust falls in homeroom, joining either the baseball team or the cheerleading squad, but not both. There's also an elimination component, but the first person that doesn't get bounced until episode 3, spoiler alert, I did not watch that far. The season builds toward a fake prom with one couple trying to win prom king and queen, or king and queen, because there are queer people in the cast. And the winners will get a cash prize of $100,000. And as is trendy now, the show is narrated by an entirely off-screen famous person. In this case, Lindsay Lohan making frequent references to her role in Mean Girls. Let's do the Chen check-in very briefly. Brandy, should our listeners watch Love Struck High?
Absolutely not. No. Go back to your high school and hang out in the lot. It'd be better. Like, don't do that. You'd be crazy. But no.
Sarah?
I'm afraid not.
Dave?
Only from an anthropological standpoint would I recommend watching this, because it is a study in how poor decisions can stack up very quickly on a TV show.
Not even that.
That's an excellent, excellent point.
I disagree. Dave is only saying that because he doesn't know every dating show is about dumb people being dumb with each other.
No. I'm talking like production.
Oh, I see. Okay, well, we'll get into that then briefly in a second. So, Brandy, you started watching this last week. You were furious with us almost immediately. So, first of all, I'm sorry. Sorry we did this to you. Please go ahead.
And then my
mom
walked in. She's like, what is happening? I was like, great question. Would you like to be on the pod with me, Mom?
Just gestures, everything's happening at once.
First of all, is anyone over a size 6 allowed on that set?
No.
Is anyone under 40 allowed on that set, including teachers? Like, there was just a real narrow box of who is there. My only favorite character is, I forgot, the black lesbian, the stud Sin. Yeah, Sin is my favorite, but Sin deserves better than this.
Oh my God.
Chaos.
So deserves better.
Yeah, like justice for Sin.
Yeah, Sin looked great in her suit for the homecoming dance. That was the high point of the episode, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Agree.
So there's no point dancing around it. Let's talk about why this show doesn't work. Because, you know, usually when I prepare for the podcast, I watch the show, I take notes. I have separate notes for the actual podcast where there's, you know, thoughtful prompts to get people talking. Here, it's just a list of what is wrong with this show. So I feel you are going to agree with me based on the Chen check-in. Let's go down the list, starting with what I've already touched on. The contestants are dumb and boring. Sin accepted. Brandy, truly, these are some of the dumbest people in the world. Would you agree?
Yeah, I mean, the only one I liked was like the lumberjack guy, like the really creative guy. I liked him too. Him and Sin were like fascinating, but not in the context of this show.
Yeah.
Also, just from jump, why were the cool kids and the queen bees considered separate categories? Those are not, I mean, I went to like a private school, like 100 people, and there was like overlapping groups, but the queen bees were a subset of the cool kids. Like, I don't understand.
And the jocks too. Like,
right.
I don't. Yeah. This is a very weird, let's put UK kids in an American high school setting that also seems to have learned about American high school from the gold CD that's on one of the Voyager spacecraft. Like, I don't, despite all the in-jokes, for me, everything that was wrong with it boiled down to the idea that the participants seem to have a far better grasp of what the show's pacing and, like, idea of itself should be than the show's construction did.
Mm-hmm.
So the show and Lindsay Lohan's narration, which, I mean, bless her heart, and I'm glad they came up with this workfare program for Lilo, but ooh. Once the cast comes in, they sort of like set the tone and the pace. And I've watched a lot of The Challenge, and it's like you kind of have to go with what the cast is making the show or telling you what the show is. And the construction of it is just like completely resistant to any charm that the participants bring to it.
Mm-hmm.
And everything kind of, well, I would say flows downhill from that, but it doesn't flow. It rolls like a triangular wheel might try to roll. And it's just like the pacing is kludgy. It's bad. I don't need to see that much of anyone's butt cheeks, Megan. Like, your butt cheeks are very nice, but this is school. Like,
this is school. No, it's not, Sarah. It's not school. I have a more basic question, which is, like, first of all, why the American conceit in this UK-based reality show? Like, a lot of these things do not translate. Like, I'm from Canada, and I still don't really understand what the hell homecoming is. Never mind people all the way across the Atlantic Ocean knowing all these American things about high school. It just seems so weird. Like, I know we covered Killer Camp a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Where they, like, shipped off a whole bunch of people to, like, Bulgaria or something. And then it was, like, a American slasher film conceit.
Yeah.
Are they showing this in the UK? Is it just a matter of convenience that all the people have to be UK contestants because it's cheaper to film in the UK? Like, I have no idea, just from the foundational pitch, why we are where we are right now.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in which, it's fine to do, we are basing this entirely on what your concept of a high school would be from films and
from
TV,
movies.
But then make that explicit and fucking stick to the brief. But that's not what's happening.
Yeah, I mean, homecoming is, the other thing is, like, I went to a private school, and, like, homecoming dance just happened to be, like, when we played our rival. Like, and that, like, that's what homecoming was in college, too. I mean, we had a really strong college rival. And so this could have been any dance. It could have been Sadie Hawkins. It could have been anything. And the whole thing about homecoming is that it's like there's also a sporting and a rivalry component, which is missing there. Could have been like, if you just put in the British environment, this sounds more like British universities and like the colleges within universities. Like, I don't understand what happens at night. Do they go home? Do they, like,
I wonder that too, because it's not a boarding school. So, like, where are they staying?
Yeah.
And wouldn't that be the better show? Like, if you're going to have a show about British kids or whatever, British young adults reliving their secondary school days, why not have it? Get that headmaster, get all the weird shit they're doing, field hockey tryouts, let's do it. Like, all these things, like, that seems to be the more interesting show than square peg round holing what they're doing right here.
Yeah.
But the other problem is that for some of these people, high school or whatever it's called in the UK was like 6 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
like,
they're not removed enough from this, which is why they're styled to look like they're all from, like, Mean Girls. They're styled to look like they're early 2000s.
Yeah, that's some of that's late 90s, actually.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
The other thing is that none of this, like, from what I have seen of, like, UK teen shows, this is nothing is besides, like, calling it the homecoming dance. If you just called it the dance or the fall dance, they wouldn't have known anything different. I mean, I just, you know, watching Dairy Girls, they did have, like, hurling and they had, like, a PE class. So it's like, okay, cheerleading is probably a little bit different. And they would have played, like, cricket maybe as opposed to softball or baseball. But, like, that's really it. And it's just not a good, like, I honestly would have, you need a bigger cast, first of all. You need to have, like, way more clicks. You need to, like, actually figure out, when, if I were doing casting from jump, I would have figured out what each of them regretted about school and then just let them go to town there. Like, wasn't there a show a few years ago where it was just, like, theater kids, like, reliving?
Like, Encore.
Like, high school? Yeah, like, yeah. That is what you really want. You want them to be able to, like, redo the thing, not just, like, hook up in our school. Like, that's just weird, man.
And there was also a show called, like, High School Reunion, I think was the name of it. And they got people back, like, 10 years later.
Yeah,
15 years later. Like, this was, like, actual Mean Girls era. I think we covered it on Television Without Pity.
We did.
And it's like, okay, you can't exactly do that with a competition element, but like either it needs to be way more contrived even than this or way less. Mm-hmm. But like here again, like the show doesn't exactly know what it is. And then the cast shows up and sort of is like, well, we're going to do this. And it's like, okay, well.
I know it's called Love Struck High and the whole idea is who's going to hook up with who. But the more interesting show would have been, as Brandy says, expand the cast, get all those cliques that we don't have. Like, where are the metalheads and that kind of stuff? Like, there's a whole bunch of slots. You could have like seven teams or whatever. High school, 6 or 7 years later, whatever it is, back in your clique. Who's got it and who doesn't still, you know, are the queen bees still king of the hill, that kind of thing. And like, that is a little better as far as like structure for a show that could actually benefit from like high school students returning to old haunts. But like this show is just like a really shitty dating show with terrible school sets.
Right. And the other thing is that like the part of the, you know, I would say the magic of like early dating shows, in as much as it had any, is that like people don't know, they're still acting like regular people. Whereas when you're the people in a show like this are this young, these shows have existed since before they were born. Like they are trained, they are steeped in the rhythms of like all of these dating show tropes, leaving aside all of the teen movie tropes, which is like a whole other level of troping. So like the how overwrought it is just, it's so exhausting. And then, you know, for the promotion to lean this hard on Lindsay Lohan, like you couldn't get her there. She's on fucking Cameo. Like she's not busy. Fly her in to host this. Have her be the fake mean principal instead of this, whoever this lady is.
Yeah, that's the other thing. Like, yeah, you need like, it would be better if they had like normal looking teachers who weren't just like clearly hot actors and hot actresses who were like 30 or like at most 30. I don't know. And I can't tell anymore. I looked up their ages and I was like, that's a 22-year-old. Like, I don't know. I just turned 41. I don't understand ages anymore. Nothing makes sense.
Yeah.
But like, but if you had like the homeroom teacher is just like, she seems more like the cool older sister as opposed to like the gentle older like frumpy teacher who would have been supportive. You really want like a, like an asshole older woman like in her 70s principal. You want like a real like balding, reliving his glory days jock for the gym teacher. I mean. Yes. What are we doing here? Like, at any point, the faculty could turn into contestants. I don't.
Yes.
It's yeah. So
in which case, now we have a different show. Like, that's actually
well, now
possibly
it's like
a better show.
Statutory felony high. Yeah. Which I don't really want to watch that either.
It's like a boundary crossing high. Yes.
Yeah. No.
To go back to the question of like, the cast should be bigger. The producers apparently barely care if we learn anyone's names. As they're all walking in, like, they're like, this is so-and-so. And sometimes people are walking in three at a time. We don't get a chyron of who anyone is until they give their talking heads. Like,
and the rest.
Yeah. Like, I'm Katie. Oh, it's Katie? No, you don't learn until 10 minutes later. It's K-T. like the initials. I don't know. I mean, the B-roll that they got of, like, people in the library pretending to do homework. It's like, how far are they going with this gimmick? Like, you're not doing homework.
Yeah, I want to know about the inner lives of like the extras on this set.
Yes, they just, like, walked, I brought that like, up too. Yes.
Yeah, but also, you know what? This show actually probably would have just been better if they rebranded it, just called it Breakfast Club, and all these people are in detention, and that's the whole entire premise of the show is just these people all have to like be in the school. There's no one there. They have to like just survive on a school set.
Yes.
And whoever survives detention wins the show. That's what this show should have been.
That's really smart. That actually could work. If you could actually get the rights to the Breakfast Club, you already have asses in the seat from day one.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Real
smart. Watched that.
Yeah.
I think that's plenty.
Yeah, that's good. I'm
Okay.
All right.
Okay. Now that Brandy solved it.
All right, enough of that. It's time for Around the Dial. First stop, Tara.
Hello. I am pretty sure I talked about Hacks, an HBO Max show. I talked about it last year when its first season was on. Hannah Einbinder plays Ava, a comic who loses her job writing on a sitcom over dumb tweets. She can't get hired anywhere else until her bad reputation cools down. So her manager, Jimmy, decides to send her to write for another one of his clients, Deborah Vance, played by Jean Smart. Deborah's a legendary comic. She evokes Joan Rivers in that she's an inveterate workaholic. She has a line of apparel on QVC. She lost a chance to host a late night show years ago, and she has a daughter who's trying to draft in the wake of her success. And Deborah's actually more successful than Joan Rivers because she has a residency in Las Vegas where she lives. Ava and Deborah have a lot of ups and downs getting to know each other. Ava has a lot of tiresome millennial habits and attitudes, but Deborah is also dictatorial and mean. So after a huge fight in season one, Ava emails a bunch of unflattering stories to a couple of British showrunners to use in their series about a bitchy prime minister. But then Ava and Deborah make up, and the email is still out there, which is the cliffhanger season one leaves us on, as Jimmy calls Ava to ask about the email just as she's about to take off with Deborah in Deborah's private jet. So we pick up where we left off with the plane landing, Ava panicking as she and Deborah each check their phones because Ava doesn't know if the news has already gotten to Deborah while they were in the air. And as you would expect, Ava mostly spends the first two episodes in a state of terror about Deborah discovering what she did, going back and forth on whether she should get ahead of it by telling her. Plus, Jimmy's back in Los Angeles, scheming to handle the situation so it doesn't explode at large personal expense to himself. I won't say more about how that plays out, but it is very satisfying. And Martha Kelly is involved, another great comic. The email problem gives Jimmy, played by series co-creator Paul W. Downs, a lot more to do with his assistant Kayla, played by Meg Stalter, a complete idiot who only has her job because her father's the founder of the agency. Meg Stalter is so funny and so weird. I do think this was a role she was born to play, but this is a mostly grounded show, so I hope they don't move Kayla closer to center stage and Kramer-fy her. The third and fourth episodes, she's not really in, so I was comforted by that. And we also meet Kayla's dad in the second episode. He's played by W. Earl Brown from Deadwood so perfectly that it took me several minutes to realize it was even him. And we get to meet the bitchy British showrunner's manager, Janet Stone, played by Ming-Na in a very enviable pair of aviator glasses. The way her one scene ends suggests there will be more for her to do. I'm excited to see. I hope so. First episode also kicks off a potentially big storyline for Deborah's daughter, DJ, played by Caitlin Olsen, which I'm also excited about. Jean Smart and Olsen have great mother-daughter chemistry. And even though we see them trying to forge a better relationship at this stage of life, the show never cheats the real resentments that they have for each other. It's one of the realest elements of the series. And while the Deborah-Ava stuff is obviously what the show is mostly about, making Ava as annoying as she needs to be to propel the plot also means the viewer part of me, as opposed to the critic part, wishes we got less of her and more of DJ. But all that said, it's a very good show. Everyone should be watching it. If all that wasn't enough to convince you, in the two latest episodes last week, Deborah and Ava go on the road in a tour bus, and Laurie Metcalf is the bus driver slash tour manager. I don't know anything else about anything, really, but it feels like the truest portrayal of show business since The Larry Sanders Show. Randy, however, you are a comic. Can you speak to the show's realism, or have you not engaged with it because it's too close?
No. I haven't watched Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, but this, I watched this one because, yes, like, I have mentors and stuff. Like, well, the thing is, Ava's technically Gen Z, but the fact that you called her a millennial, actually, I have had this theory that I think Ava actually would make more sense as a 35-year-old. I think that like some of the stuff she does, like a 25-year-old entitled comic meltdown and a 35-year-old entitled comic meltdown is one of them. You might keep your job like this. The other one, oh no, honey, especially as a woman. Mm-mm. So I don't think she reads as like 25. I mean, okay, or 35, yeah. Like or 30, 35. But yeah, this is great. Like, I mean, it's just really, really like fascinating, and I think it really talks about like there this is in every industry. There are like women who want to make sure that like you never went through what they went through, and then the ones who are just like, I survived, like you should just suck it up and deal with it. And I think this is, you know, one path of that. But yeah, like other than like the fact that she, like, Ava would have been fired, like this is exactly what happens when you travel with someone who's like higher up, and like I haven't been on a bus and stuff, and I've opened for people and like these weird shows where you're in the middle of nowhere and you're just eating garbage food. Yeah
It's excellent. Dave, you also watched the show. Any thoughts to add?
Just that I don't really know what they're doing with her manager. He seems to be sidelined.
Oh, with Marcus? Yeah.
Yeah, and I feel like they could probably rework or lose that or just like rethink it, because it stops the show. when it comes on. It's like a very small note. The show is excellent. I always look forward to it.
That's a good point. I do love that character, so I'm glad to that we can look forward to him spending more time with Deborah, because I agree the sad Marcus was too sad. I have two plugs this week. I wrote a piece for Vanity Fair about Emmy-friendly comedies not always making you laugh. No offense, Atlanta's a great show, but is it a comedy? I don't know.
Yeah, not a real knee slapper, that one.
Or Flight year. Attendant, when people are getting murdered constantly. Like, eh.
Wait, that's a comedy?
It was a nominee for best
I love that
comedy.
Show. No.
Well, that's what the Emmys think. That was my point. So you can read that at Vanity Fair. But I also want to plug, we have for our sister podcast, Listen to Sassy, a Zoom watch along of Weekend at Bernie's, Wednesday, May 25th at 8 p.m. Eastern. This is for members of the Listen to Sassy club only. So make sure you are in the club. It's only $5 a month for lots of perks, including that one. And Dave has never seen this movie before, so it's going to be a real journey for him.
Comedy, right?
That one is a comedy, yeah, okay, for
that's
sure.
That's the rumor. Phew. Mm-hmm.
Brandy, what do you have for us?
All right. Well, I will save this one, but I was abroad, if you will, and I have seen season 3 of Derry Girls, and I am in shambles still. So, but I will be talking about something else from across the pond that is a little more accessible, and it's on PBS, or it's on Amazon Prime, and that show is New Scandinavian Cooking. Apparently, I have a friend, I'm in Minnesota, so I have a lot of Norwegian hookups and connections, but my Norwegian-American friend said that this is like hotel TV in Norway. No one watches this show. I don't care. They have 4 different chefs, one each season. The main one that I'm a huge fan of, his name is Andreas Vistad, and he cooks stuff in Scandinavia, but it's so like slow TV, but he just like one episode he goes to Iceland and he loves leeks, so he cooks like leeks and like meat in a volcano. Yeah. But like it's okay. Just it's so weird, like he'll just be in a park like setting up shop and cooking. One time he walked up to this woman's house and he was just like, hey, can I use some of your driveway? And she's like, what? And he like picks up rocks and like I guess there was calcium in it, so he like used that to make bread. He one time set up shop next to a dock, and a guy like dressed as a kind of like a clown like cooked a tart by fire breathing on it. But like it's not that exciting, but it's just like some of the recipes are really good. I've made some of them, but it's just this like weird Norwegian guy just cooking. He cooked on a train. He cooked up like some bread or something in a suitcase on a train. It's just so like gentle, and it's great to have on TV in the background. There's another one I'm a huge fan of named Tina. Tina is, she like at one point she was making like ice cream on top of a glacier. She sometimes goes camping. Andreas was once fishing in a 3-piece suit. It's so weird, but so just gentle. And you're like, sure, I'll put this on. So
I love
New
it.
Scandinavian Cooking.
On PBS, right?
PBS. It's on Amazon Prime, too.
Sold.
And for your plugs?
I'm currently locked on Twitter just because I tweet too much. There's nothing going on. I'm not canceled. But my Twitter is it's the Brandy. ITS, the Brandy with an I. And I am going to be on season 4. I'm on previous seasons of a podcast out of Minnesota Public Radio and Brains On. It's for kids. It's called Smash Boom Best. If you want to find my episodes, just search for Brandy Brown. It's a debate show. We debate different things. One time I debated pandas versus penguins. this recent episode, it's not out yet, but it's seahorses versus hummingbirds. I've done like superhuman strength versus superhuman power. You can listen to it with your kids, and it's great. It's me and another adult. Sometimes it's like a public radio person. One time, like a couple times, it's been another comedian and a high school student who's usually like way more accomplished than us. It's like all these like Intel science winners or something, is a judge. And my former classmate in high school, Molly Bloom, who's apparently a rock star host over on Brains On, has a bunch of shows. She's kind of the host, and it's a good time. It's fun to listen to with your kids. So it's a family friendly show. Smash Boom Best.
That sounds great.
Pretty Bunting.
Talk about slow TV. I am here to talk about Naked City. This is mid-century, like 6 decades old slow TV, so it is not going to be for everyone. But if everything that is going on in the world has you in search of soothing television, Naked City for a, you know, show about homicide dicks might actually be just the thing if you were like, Bosch and Columbo, this is too zippy. Slow down. This is for you. It's not like Bosch and Columbo. It's not utterly brilliant. Don't at me, Columbo people. You know who you are. But it has its rhythms. It is a veritable, hey, it's that cotton top Law and Order witness fest, an episode I watched recently, which was the second season premiere called A Death of Princes, does in fact feature one of the players in that Law and Order about the woman accused of starving her grandma. It also actually has Peter Falk in the opening scene and Eli Wallach as the main bad guy in a corrupt cop plot. Naked City also has a ton of mid-century visual delights if you're into that kind of thing. A lot of hats, chrome bumpers for literal days, old school Manhattan signage, rotary phones, hard-sided pocketbooks with bamboo handles. And the dialogue is role stagey, but actually more naturalistic than you might expect from a show of the era. The talking villainy means that you don't have to pay super close attention. Someone in a trilby is going to explain it all for you before the credits. The line between soothing and Joel Kinnaman is really not all that fine. And if that sounds like the kind of dull that will make you crazy versus pleasantly sleepy, you should skip this. But if you do self-soothe with Columbo or Murder, She Wrote, and you have run out of episodes of that, try Naked City. The series run is on Amazon Freevee, I roll, in its entirety. Speaking of vintage crap, for my plug, finalization of the moistest soft rock hits of all time has occurred. Do not touch anything in Lionel Richie's room on your way to listen to the America's Damp 40 finale on Mark and Sarah Talk About Songs. Mark Blankenship and I worked with you listeners to crown the dampest soft rock hit of all time, and we recorded the episode while I was wearing a bikini made of damp red packets. It was a real journey. It has concluded on a beach with the warm wind blowing the stars around. So we'd really like to see you in our podcast mentions. Check it out wherever you get podcasts / defrizzing hair product.
All right, coming up on the Extra Hot Great Cinematic Universe on Extra, Extra Hot Great, the podcast that puts an extra, extra, and extra hot great, extra, extra hot great 183. I love saying extra. It is reverse engineer a hit. We are taking a song and then figuring out what show would be born from the use of that song as its theme. And then on Tuesday, May 31st, we've got important TV starches.
Yeah, we do.
That's exactly what you think it is. That is available to all supporters at any level. Please visit patreon.com/extrahotgreat to become a supporter of this podcast and get all of those existing extra, extra hot greats in your feed. And then right here on Extra Hot Great Prime, next week it is Obi-Wan Kenobi with new guest Simone Chavour. You may have heard on the Star Wars edition of the Great American Pop Culture Quiz Show recently, so check that out. It is time for the Extra Hot Great Canon. Presenting this week is Tara. Take it away, Tara.
Hello.
Hi.
I was cool on Hulu's Shrill when it premiered in 2019. Adapted from Lindy West's book of the same name, its short first season felt rushed even before it had to barrel toward a climax based on a real online troll incident in West's life, and then just sort of fizzled out. I wasn't sure I was going to watch the second season, but I'm glad that I did. Freed from the original source material, it's much more compelling in the ways it lets its protagonist, Annie, played by Adi Bryant, deal with the conflicts in her life. How her mother's negative body image affected Annie's feelings about her own weight, what she wants from her relationship with her boyfriend Ryan, played by Luka Jones, and how to progress her career as a writer at The Thorn, a free weekly in Portland, despite her editor's often open hostility toward her. Basically, every episode of the first season seemed to be about what it's like for Annie to be a fat woman in America. She has other concerns in season two, which makes Shrill a lot more interesting to watch. And the pinnacle of the second season for me was the sixth episode titled Waham. Here are the reasons that I think it deserves a place in the canon. Number one, Justine. Annie has been sent to cover a women's empowerment conference called Waham, which stands for Women Are Having a Moment. Justine, played by Vanessa Bayer, is an unholy mix of Goop's Gwyneth Paltrow, Facebook's Sheryl Sandberg, and The Wing's Audrey Gelman as the figurehead for whatever this move-in is supposed to be. As a member of the press, Annie has been granted an extremely brief audience with her. Annie was late for her slot, but Justine makes time. Clip one.
You literally saved me back there. I honestly felt ill. Oh my gosh, well, if a few minutes of my time can help you, we gotta do it. Plus, I love your blouse, so I was already on board.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, I found this designer online because it's always, you know, it's such a hunt to find cool clothes for fat women.
Wow, I love how you say that word, fat. I don't know that I would say that.
Oh, I mean, yeah, I don't mind saying it. I'm fat. It's just true, you know. I'm not afraid of it. It's just a descriptor, so.
That is so powerful. I love that.
Oh, well, thank you.
Last question.
Oh, I actually haven't asked any questions yet.
Oh, okay. So then your first question will be your last question.
Justine dicking around trying to manufacture a human moment with Annie and making her assistant be the bad guy for keeping her on schedule and not contradicting him, even though she obviously could if she wanted to, does a lot to communicate what Justine is about, but so does the answer to Annie's first and last question. Clip two.
So I was surprised to see that tickets to this event start at $300, and I know that part of Waham's mission statement is lifting up every woman, but can you really do that if the price point is so inaccessible? So I've thought about this quite a bit, and we offer sponsorships for low-income women so they can attend free of charge.
Got it.
So we've kind of already got that all figured out. So I have to go, but thank you for coming.
Okay.
Do you have a little bag of apricots?
Yep, sure do.
Thank you so much.
Great.
Danny. Would there be any way that I could possibly, I don't know, meet with one of the low-income women who was sponsored?
Oh, it's such a bummer. Actually, she couldn't make it because she couldn't get off work. But enjoy the day. That badge gets you a water.
Justine can't expend a lot of energy interrogating her own assumptions about which women are actually having a moment because it might introduce facts that would negate her brand as a pioneer, which we hear her elucidate later at her keynote address, clip three.
Now, I remember being the only young woman at my company. And I remember the moment that they hired another female executive. And a man said to me, "Looks like you finally got some competition." And compete with her I did. Till I got her fired. Now guess what? That woman that I got fired is here today. Give it up for Rebecca!
You can barely hear it, but that's Annie at the end going, fuck. Justine goes on to humble brag about getting up every day at 4 a.m. to run 5 miles and not having touched bread in 20 years, except on 9/11 because she really needed it. But as her keynote goes on, we come to understand that she kind of thinks of herself as every woman. Clip four. So a note for the listeners who did not watch this episode. After Justine smashes the glass ceiling, her right fist changes to a flat hand, fingers together, sweeping through the air. And I am confident that episode director Natasha Lyonne intends us to remember Laura Ingraham, also in pastels, making a very similar Heil Hitler-y gesture at the 2016 Republican National Convention. Justine isn't exactly Hitler, but she'll certainly never go broke as long as she continues co-opting the language of empowerment, including of communities she definitely does not belong to. The writing and performance of this embodiment of capitalist feminism is extremely sharp, and I am here for it. Number two, the portrayal of the Waham conference itself. Speaking of capitalist feminism, I really wish I could have been in the writer's room the day they brainstormed what products should be for sale at this event. That the first thing Annie sees on the millennial pink trade show floor is a display of hot pink handguns is perfect enough, but then for her to move on to the bespoke marble vibrators is amazing. and took me back to a very old Sarah J. Bunting joke about falling out of love with Bust magazine after one too many features on crocheting your own vibrator cozy. This exchange, however, is next level, clip five.
So what exactly is your business? Oh, makeup for your legs. Oh, like to cover the gross skin on your legs. And so is that a big problem for most women? Yeah, maybe the biggest. I mean, for years, I was suffering from, like, disgusting leg skin. Yeah, and so then do people use this every day? Yeah, once it's part of your routine, it's totally easy. You just have to wait 30 minutes after application to put your pants on. Wow, and so why would you put makeup on and then put pants on? Because no one will see it. Yeah, but you'll have the confidence of a woman whose disgusting leg skin is covered up. Honestly, it's so much fun.
I love the choice to underplay the results in the next scene as Annie walks to the bathroom with her own legs as aggressively contoured as a drag queen's face. Annie then has to go through this at Justine's keynote, clip six.
Here's your free t-shirt. Please put it on before the keynote begins.
Oh, well, this won't fit me. It says small.
Sure it will.
Do you maybe have like a double XL or?
No, but we do have a generous medium.
They are huge.
It's like a dress on me.
Oh. Justine's blind spots as a woman with a lot of privilege. She's rich. She's thin. She's white. Also belong to the conference itself. Women are treated as a monolith for the purposes of selling them shit, but there's virtually no conception of the multiplicity that exists within the category of womanhood. Still, busy working women with families may not have the energy to seek out actually empowering options like a church quilting bee that's just a cover for a lesbian separatist cell or a literal witch's coven. Busy working women with families have definitely heard of Waham, however. Annie hears the pro side in the boss bitch restroom, clip seven.
Yeah, I feel like with the leg makeup and the burning thighs, I may need to get the hell out of here.
Oh, no. Do you not like Waham?
Oh, I mean, it's really impressive, and it's so big. I'm not sure that I, like, get it, you know?
Connie's been to 11.
Oh, why?
I mean, it might sound silly, but where I grew up, you know, girl power and feminism and that stuff weren't such a big thing, you know? I just didn't know much about it.
Honestly, same for me.
Plus, I love to network and engage.
Okay, what does that mean?
Networking and engaging is just a lie we tell our husbands so we can come hang out with our friends.
Okay, well, that makes sense. That makes sense.
The assiduously pink Waham conference, marketing itself directly at these women, does, in its limited way, fulfill their need for connection with other women. But the episode does a great job showing that such benefits are incidental to Waham's real purpose, promoting a particular version of womanhood achievable only through consumption. Number three, Annie, who isn't actually shrill at all. Yes, I know that almost all women who get called shrill actually aren't, but Annie really isn't. She lets the worst of the Waham bullshit roll off her without causing a scene. Even when she's ordered to wear the too small t-shirt at the keynote, she just drapes it on her chest and goes on with her day. After challenging conversations earlier in the season with her mother, Vera, played by Julia Sweeney, Annie is trying in a very gentle way to connect with her without pushing too hard. Annie has so much empathy for Connie, the woman she met in the bathroom, that her editor, Gabe, John Cameron Mitchell, has to push her to be more opinionated, more shrill, if you will, in her piece about the event, clip eight.
You wrote the word CEO without irony or commentary. Are you dead? What do you really feel about this woman moment thing? You, Annie.
I don't know. It was inspiring, I guess. And demented.
Demented, I guess. What have you been hanging out at the Clackamas Town Center? What's with this jargon?
It made me think that there's a reason that men don't need to be, like, constantly told that they're powerful. It's because they're in power.
Okay, and with women?
And women, I mean, we were, like, screaming in huge pink letters that we're powerful just to try and convince ourselves, you know? And all the statistics that they gave about how bad things are for women, it's like it's 1,000 times worse if you're a woman who can't afford to be slathered in $100 oils.
Okay, so it's a con.
Yes, but there were also all these women there who were genuinely really getting something out of it. But to me, it just felt like it was about money.
Okay, we're getting somewhere. Monetizing feminism. right?
Yes, exactly. And women are made to feel so insecure, and then each insecurity is like a new opportunity to make more money.
It's sad.
Yes. And all day, all they talked about was self-care. But it's not taking care of yourself to agree that you're ugly and you need to be fixed.
Aidy Bryant brings so much kindness and curiosity to the character of Annie. I cannot imagine anyone else in the role. Fourth and finally, it establishes that Annie and Ryan might break up for a good reason. Spoiler, kind of. In the first season, Annie and Ryan were hooking up, but on the sly, because he didn't consider Annie girlfriend material due to her weight. Her realization that she didn't deserve to be treated that way was a turning point for them and the start of her reclaiming her self-esteem. It was also kind of a bullshit cliche about men who sleep with fat women, and one of the reasons I was not wild about season one. But as we start to see in this episode, Annie and Ryan do have significant differences. As she's rising at work and establishing herself, he's apparently fine being unemployed until she suggests that, you know, it might be a good idea for him to get a job. When he surprises her by getting hired as a driver at the Thorn, he expects that she'll be happy about it, and she probably should be, but the fact that her reaction seems to be horror that he's going to be around her more should cue her that she and Ryan are not going to last. And her weight has nothing to do with it, which is progress for the show. Wahham is a takedown of commercialized feminism that is both very current and very savage. Please vote for its induction into the canon and against $99 candles that smell like Gwyneth Paltrow's vagina. Brandy, you chose this from our list of submissions. Please start us off.
Yeah, I accidentally watched Shrill. Like, I forgot what I was watching, and it just Hulu did its thing and started playing. And I was like, oh, okay, I will watch this. I ended up watching like the whole series in like a day and a half. It was wild. But yeah, like I was kind of on the fence about inducting this one just because I felt like it season three maybe had some stronger episodes for the canon. But then I like upon like hearing your reasoning and remembering some other things about this, I was like, I'm still on the fence. But I really, really like this one. Like, first of all, Vanessa Bayer, who I worked with her once. She's a delightful person, but also just so good at playing like really happy, unhinged people.
Yes.
And also her assistant is, I don't know if you've seen, it's the new show. I love that for you. Mm-hmm. The assistant is like the same assistant on that. And he's just
yeah,
real
true.
Good. He's a real good shady so asshole. Good.
Yeah.
Real
that's Matt Rogers asshole. From Last Culturistas.
Yeah. And also I really like the part where like Annie was in the bathroom with, you know, like talking with those women, because I think it reminds me a lot of like, we all roast the resistance people and the pink pussy hat people, but for like a lot of those people who aren't very online or aren't like, didn't have connections, like that was their like entree into political activism. And like some of them like got scooped up and some of them like, you know, found their way, and some of them are like being obnoxious and terrible and making terrible decisions. But the fact of the matter is, it's like, I think that was a good look to be like, look, like you're so cynical, but like, if this is all you had access to, or like, this is all you knew, like, that's why you would do that. And you probably do, like, just like people don't like their jobs, but they have like work friends. They probably did make friends through that. But like, mm-hmm. the biggest problem isn't the people who go to that. It's the people who exploit the people who go to that. And that's really a good focus on that, and just how like oblivious, you know, that whole like industry is to just the people they're harming and like the, you know, exploiting of people and just ignoring like the poor people and being like, oh, she couldn't make it. She couldn't get off from work.
Was she, such a good the line. One.
She, oh God.
But yeah, I think I feel like this one, my hesitation here is because I think that this one is a good example of like just the critique. But like Annie, like exploring the world outside of her own life. But I think the white supremacist episode and like the fallout from that in season three kind of gets at that more, because I really would have, for this episode, I forgot that we don't actually see in this what the final article looks like and like what exactly her takeaway is. And then also just some of the dynamics with Ryan, I think I would have liked to see more, because he is a mess. Like, look, I had some Ryan tendencies, but I've also dated Ryans where I was like, dude, did you not remember like very simple things I told you 8 times? But like also we don't get to see Fran as much, and Fran's great. I just think that the season three is where we saw like just a little bit more. And like, of course, Patty Harrison, I love Patty. So I'm still like, I like this episode. I just don't love it for the canon.
Sarah.
I never saw an episode of this before. It did make me want to keep watching. So as everyone knows, the Bunsey criterion, the Bunsey corollary is that if I want to keep going on a streamer and it flips over and I'm like, okay, that's a key thing in its favor. Here's my struggle with this, even though I laughed out loud many times and also paused it several times to make sure I wrote down and tried to render exactly how a line was delivered, because particularly just the way that she couldn't make it because she couldn't get off work. Enjoy the day, that badge gets you a water. Like, there is a fucking novel in that, and it is delivered flawlessly.
In one breath.
Yeah. He is great. Like, nobody sells out, like, even when they're supposed to be sort of embodying certain obnoxious quiz of this situation. No one sells out their roles, but it's also not like asterisked too hard. And then there's that whole scene with her and her mom and the, like, I'm not Willie Nelson joke. And then this poor hapless woman telling this story about my adult son, Jeffrey, who's a virgin. Like, it's just, I mean, it's cheap, but it worked. Like, it was really well delivered. My only hesitation is this. There did seem to be an almost, not like Chautauqua, but like when she's having this discussion and talking through her article, it's sort of like the first draft carefulness of it with the editor, who is, you know, it's John Cameron Mitchell. So there's another sort of like meta layer about our relationships with womanhood there. And I liked that that was in dialogue with itself, but some of this did feel a little bit Socratic in terms of like, this is what we need you to be thinking about. And this is the way in which we get this into dialogue, that felt a little bit unnatural. But at the same time, the points that they were trying to get into the dialogue were on point. So I'm sort of torn that it's like, this felt a little bit, not fakey, but just like the ways that this, like the framing device that was used felt a little false and noticeable. But was it like, was that worthwhile? And is that also in dialogue with false constructs of ideas of monolithic feminism, blah, blah, blah. So I'm not going to bore anybody with my unqualified thoughts on that, but that was the only thing sort of holding me back from an unqualified, this is definitely good for the canon vote, is like, how intentional is that artifice? And now I, in my bachelor's degree, will shut up and kick it to Dave.
Hey, speaking about unqualified opinions, here we go. I enjoyed his take on, you have to consume things in order to be as successful what you want to be conceit, right? And that's for everything. Like, you name it, you got it. It could be something, you know, as important to your core identity as your feminist values. It can be, so you want to be a video gamer, eh? Buy this chair. It will do nothing for you, but you need it. You have to spend $600 on it or you'll never be successful, that kind of thing. So I thought this episode was great. I didn't really know what to expect from the show. I know Tara was watching it and she was sort of lukewarm when it started, and then she sort of got into it further on, and the goopiness of it is an easy target, but I'm still here for it. Having to consume the fucking Goop Lab season one, it's still kind of, I'm still a little bit sore about that. I thought that the only part that I didn't quite understand is in the whole discussion at the end with her editor, seemed like I don't know why her first draft wasn't better. Like, I don't know what it is about the character that she couldn't get to the core problem with these sort of, you know, capitalist events.
Yeah.
And it seems sort of weird that she just biffed it completely, where she was just writing like almost a regurgitation of a press release or something as a way they kind of presented it. So that was like the one kind of big head scratcher for me. I don't know, Tara, if you can speak to that.
Well, there's definitely more stuff between Gabe and Annie from season one, where they have a more adversarial relationship for sure. Mm-hmm. So I thought they sort of earned it. I mean, I took Sarah's points that it was like the episode had a thesis and it wanted to make sure to underline it. And the way they did it was through dialogue, like Sarah said. Yeah. So I think that's a fair critique. But, you know, she also I also think they sort of earned it by giving her that scene in the bathroom with the women who were like the Wham super fans who were like, right. I've been to 11. She didn't want to sell them out or be too mean if they read it and be like, oh, I met that woman in the bathroom. And she thought I was bullshit, you know. So mm-hmm. I think she's trying to just split that hair, I guess.
Right.
Right.
I do appreciate that it wasn't an over the top takedown. Right. Like it wasn't at 11. And that has a lot to do with the lead character and sort of just her energy level and how she approaches things, and also the fact that she's trying to come into it as a journalist sort of blunts the edges that way too. So I do appreciate it wasn't like 100% snarky takedown of this sort of terrible ecosystem that has grown around trying to be a better you. And that I feel like is kind of core to the show.
She seems to share a non-judgmental curiosity vibe with the guy from High Maintenance.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, she lets the world come at her instead of immediately going on the offensive kind of thing. I mean, they share that trait where they are willing to absorb the information. There's sort of the, you know, the sponge like, in the relationship.
Huh. Yeah, right? Yeah. Agree.
So I think that helps with that ending too, I think. All right, let's put this to the official vote. Brandy, you were sort of humming and hawing there. What do you think? Canon worthy or not?
I'm sorry, I'm going to go with no.
Sarah D. Bunting.
I'm going to say yes. I laughed a bunch. I want to watch more, so I'm going to say yes.
The sort of the understated takedown of everything really won me over on this one, and that would only get stronger as well as the season goes on, as they hone that instinct. So I absolutely would check out the episode that Brandy was talking about as well. So let us then make it official. All right, that means that Shrill Season 2, Episode 6, Wham! You are hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Rick Cannon.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
All right, it's time for Winner and Loser of the Week. Sarah has this week's loser, so let's go to Tara with the winner first.
Good idea.
Yep. The winner of the week is Smash. Remember Smash? They made a Broadway show of it, or rather they made a musical, a live stage show of it. And it could be on Broadway sooner than later, according to Mark Shaman, the composer. So sub-winner Adam Grossworth, not just for this, but also because High School Musical : the musical : the series also got renewed for a fourth season. So everything's coming up Grossworth this week. Congratulations, Adam.
And loser of the week?
I will note, because it connects the two together, that I found out today that there was a Bonnie and Clyde musical. Anyway, my losers are TV-adjacent criminals in triplicate. The first one, possibly the most interesting thing at this point about HBO Max's The Staircase, is that everyone in it, the real-life figures, are all mad at it.
Yeah.
This week, it's now Michael Peterson's defense attorney, David Rudolph. Not happy about it. Last week, it was the original filmmakers of the original Staircase documentary series. Like nobody is liking the take. Armie Hammer is also going to be the subject of a Discovery Plus special about his alleged crimes and those of his family, which are myriad. The book about it, which is called Dossier, is literally 728 pages.
Yeah, across four generations of Hammers.
Is it called Hammer Time?
Yeah. All different kinds of badness. And finally, Austin St. John, who will be familiar to maybe two of you as the Red Ranger on Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, has been charged with wire fraud related to COVID funds. Mm-hmm. Good work, everybody.
Speaking of wire fraud?
Yeah, sure. Speaking of wire fraud, do you know what time it is?
It's daytime.
Daytime.
Oh, shit. You know what it is. It actually is. Speed about morphing time. Do you know what time it is?
It's game time.
Okay.
Game time. It's yet.
No, it's not. It is, in fact, morphing time. It is germane to this week's game. Welcome to the sixth game time of the season. Our scores are Tara with 3, Sarah with 1, Value Guess with 1. The last game was about 5 months ago. So if you don't remember the scores, there you have it. 3-1-1. Today we are playing We Get Letters from Erica, who earns herself an extra credit topic for her troubles. This is an extra hot, great standard, but if you're new to the show, this is how it works. Someone has changed the titles of TV shows by one letter, creating a slightly skewed show in the process. I'll give you a synopsis of the changed title show. You give me the new title in which one letter has been changed. Here's an example. Bill Paxton balances work, love, and life with the help of his 3 porcine wives.
Pig love.
So big love becomes pig love with that one letter change right at the start. The letter change can be anywhere in the title. Doesn't necessarily rhyme after we change it either, but sometimes it does. All right, let's get the steel meal situation, please, Tara.
Thank you, Dave. Sarah D. Bunting has 16 steel meals. She is a steel millionaire. I have 8. The valued guest this week, that's Brandy, has 8 plus Eric's meal for a total of 9.
All right. So if somebody answers incorrectly before I give the right answer, just shout steal meal and then you can try to steal whatever points are still in play at that time. All right. Let's throw it to Picky to see who will be playing first today.
We will start with Tara.
All right. Tara, Sarah, Brandy is our order today. Are we ready to play We Get Letters?
Yes.
All right, we have 3 rounds today. Our first round is replacing a letter, just like in the example. So we're just going to be swapping one letter for another. Here we go, Tara. A couple of brothers in Nantucket just can't stop closing one eye, which is bad considering they're both pilots.
Winks.
Winks from Wings. Yes, correct. Sarah.
Yeah.
Victor Frankenstein and Dorian Gray deal with Wolfman Dracula and trying to run a bakery in 1890s London.
Oh my God. Where? What? Oh, is this Penny Breadful?
It is Penny Dreadful, Penny Breadful.
Remember, important TV starches next week on Extra Extra Heart Rate. Yum!
First question to Brandy. Sometimes you want to go where everybody falls off really steep cliffs. I can sing that for you if you want. I can't, actually. Sometimes you want to go where everybody falls off really steep cliffs. Sometimes you want to go where everybody falls off really steep cliffs. So talk it out. It might help you.
Yeah. and it's one letter?
One letter has been changed.
Doing that thing where you have like one left on Wordle and you're like, fine, I'll get out a pen.
Shears
from Cheers. Yes, falling off a cliff. Absolutely correct. Everybody is tied. Everybody got their first question. Back to Tara.
Yes.
Doug Ross and Mark Green save lives and are absolutely disgusted about it.
Ew.
E-R-E-W.
Nice. Correct. I never would have gotten that.
To Sarah. Ted Allen tells contestants to open their baskets, but the only thing inside is a lip balm.
Ted Allen tells contestants to open their baskets.
Correct. But the only thing inside is a lip balm.
The only thing inside is a lip balm. Oh, gosh. Okay, so... Ted Allen. What is Ted Allen on that has baskets? I can't seem to...
And contestants.
Yes. Chapped. It must be Chapped.
Chopped becomes Chapped. Correct. All right, Brandy. Ruth and Debbie adopt over-the-top personas to make it big in the world of snow removal. Ruth and Debbie adopt over-the-top personas to make it big in the world of snow removal.
I don't know. I don't know.
That's well, it's our first stumper.
Steel meal.
Steel meal from Sarah.
Is it plow?
Yes. Glow becomes plow. Correct. All right. Last question for each of you in round one to Tara.
Yep.
Roy Scheider.
Yep.
Fucking hell, every time. Roy Scheider, Anthony Brandis, and a talking dolphin go on a search for the perfect oolong.
Oh. Well.
Any idea what we're talking about there?
I thought it was Sequest DSV, but I don't know where any of those letters would change and what they would change to. So I do not know.
Steel meal.
Steel meal. Brandy got two first.
T-Quest.
T-Quest. DSV is correct. Nice. We'll accept just T-Quest. It was known as just T-Quest once upon a time, I believe. To Sarah.
Wait, who did you say the other character? What's the other character? Jonathan Brandis? Did you say someone else, Brandis?
Jonathan Brandis and a talking dolphin.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
I think you said Anthony Brandis.
Yeah, I thought you said Anthony too,
but
Brandis.
It's all right.
Yeah.
We all knew what you were talking about.
Yeah. You know. We all make mistakes.
All right.
Where was I? Okay, Sarah. Dale Cooper tries to solve the mystery of why both his sink and bathtub are constantly dripping.
Oh, that's very clever because the twin leaks are right there in the question as well.
You are correct. All right, last question of round one for Brandy. Bad boys, bad boys. What you gonna do? What you gonna do when your corn's all chewed?
Chops?
No. Cobs. Corn on the cobs. All chewed. Cobs, cobs. All right. Let's get a score break at the end of round one.
It's a very close game. Brandy and I are tied with 2 points each. Sarah is ahead with 4.
All right. Round two has arrived. We are now subtracting a letter from the title.
Okay.
So we're not
okay.
changing it. We're taking one letter away. Okay. Tara, here's the first question of round two.
Yep.
None of the police at the station were careful out there, so now they all got the sniffles. Talk it out. Show your work.
Wait.
None of the police at the station were careful out there, so now they've all got the sniffles.
You're just taking one away?
Taking a letter away.
Okay. Okay. Well, careful out there could be Cop Rock or Hill Street Blues. I'm going to assume it's Hill Street.
Now they got the sniffles.
I don't know.
Steel meal.
Steel meal from Sarah.
Ill Street Blues.
Ill Street Blues, of course.
You are correct. All right, Sarah, here is your full question. Ma and Pa Ingalls are unable to water all of their garden.
Are unable to water
all of their garden.
Oh, Jesus. Erica, shame on you. Little hose on the prairie.
Little hose on the prairie. Can't water all of the garden. It's too damn short. Brandy's not impressed. All right, Brandy.
Speaking of ew.
Crockett and Tubbs go undercover to find out what's causing all this sleet and hail.
Oh, Miami Ice.
Miami Ice. Take that V away. Miami Ice. Back to Tara.
Yep.
Oh,
no.
Might be my favorite one. Chuck Norris is a stove with multiple burners.
Walker, Texas Range.
Correct. Sarah, Sydney Bristow and her multiple wigs are loudly and constantly lamenting how sad she is.
I would watch a spy show called Alas.
Correct. All right, back to Brandy. Eleanor asked Chidi to teach her how to make the nicest of all possible doilies.
The good lace.
The good lace, yes. All right, Tara.
Yep.
Bill Paxton has a lot of wives and also a lot of husbands.
Okay. A lot of wives. A lot of husbands. Bye, love!
It took a while. I was like, what's a low?
So few letters to take away there. Yeah. All right, Sarah.
Yes.
Come knocketh upon our door. We hast been waiting for you.
Okay.
Come knocketh upon our door. We hast been waiting for you.
Okay, so this is Three's Company, but where, whither the lost letter? Okay, I am thinking about all these.
Come knocketh upon
letters.
Our door. We hath been waiting for you.
We hath been waiting hath for you.
Been waiting for you. Yes.
Yes. So, these company.
These company. Okay. Yes.
Oh, wow.
All right. Last question of round two for Brandy. With the power of three, the Hollowell sisters will hurt you.
Harmed?
Harmed, yes, from Charmed. All right, that is round two. Scores, please, Tara.
Well, we're getting a little further apart. I am in last place with 4 points. Brandy has 5. Sarah D. Bunting has 8.
Those steel mills coming
in. Who wants to marry
handy.
A steel millionaire?
Round three, adding a letter. So you're adding a letter to the title now. You are putting a letter somewhere in the existing title to create the new show, Tara.
Yep.
Oliver Queen's favorite meal is Oso Buco.
Marrow.
Marrow from Arrow, correct. Sarah.
Mm-hmm.
A Muppet infiltrates a men's prison and gets stabbed to death by J.K. Simmons. Waka waka.
Oh, Erica. this is so sick. Foz.
Foz,
Adam
yes.
Grossworth's week just keeps getting better and better.
All right, Brandy, adding a letter. A whole bunch of Stephen King characters wear pretty, pretty dresses.
Oh.
A whole bunch of Stephen King characters wear pretty, pretty dresses.
Is it the Scary Diaries?
Nope, wrong show.
Why not?
All right.
Is it Castle Frock?
Castle Rock, yes. Tara.
Yep.
A sexy Scotsman and a time-traveling nurse each attempt to get the upper hand while destroying each other's reputation.
Adding a letter, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, it's Outlander, but where shall the letter go?
Sussy Scotsman and a time-traveling nurse each attempt to get the upper hand while destroying each other's reputations.
Outlander?
Steel Mill.
Steel Mill from Brandy.
Outlander.
I was so close. Nicely done.
All right. This is another pretty good one. Sarah.
Yeah.
Mandy Moore and Sterling K. Brown finally identified that disgusting bodily fluid.
Oh. I don't. This is like having to order Moons Over Miami. Like, you respect it, but you don't want to go there.
I understand.
But I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
This is pus.
All right, Brandy. In the criminal justice system, people are represented by two equally important groups: the police who investigate crime and shredded cabbage in a mayonnaise sauce.
Slaw and order,
sure. All right, everybody's last question is coming at you, so let's get the scores, please, Tara.
Well, I am firmly in last place with 5. Brandy has 7. Sarah has 11.
All right, here we go. Your last question, Tara.
Yep.
Every weekend, the Dillon Panthers take Southwest, Delta, or American.
Friday night flights.
Sarah?
Yeah.
In order to play Mountain Climber or Plinko, you need to deal with your phobias first.
Oh, the price is fright.
And finally, for Brandy, Heather Locklear's Los Angeles apartment complex gets turned into a castle.
Melrose Palace
is a correct. Final scores then, please, Tara.
I finished with 6. Brandy had 8. Sarah is our victor with 12.
All right, well done. Before we make it official, let's play the tiebreaker that we didn't need for an extra steel meal for future use. First person to shout out the correct answer wins. This is what happens when people stop being polite and start acting like monarchs.
Regal world?
The yeah. Regal world.
Oh, good job, Sarah.
There we go. The regal world. Sarah gets it all today.
Sarah.
All right, guys, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot. Great. We all thought real hard about skipping class on Love Struck High before going around the dial with stops at Hacks, New Scandinavian Cooking, and Naked City. Tara got shrill into the canon. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Sarah was the winner of this week's Game Time for America. Next up, Song to Show on Extra, Extra Hot, Great. And on the next EHG Prime, it's Obi-Wan Kenobi. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariana,
my love,
Sarah D. Bunting.
That is so powerful.
And Brandy Brown.
Break the glass ceiling.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you next time right here on Extra. Hot. Great.
I actually feel like we really, like, worked it out together in a nice way.
Let's not stretch this out.
Yeah.
Really ruin it.